I still remember vividly the fear I had in college of final exams. One final exam particularly motivated me to change and to work much harder. It was in literature class, and all during the semester, I would be writing essays on important people's essays, what I thought about them and so on. And I was getting B pluses, you know, or B minuses. I felt very confident about this. But when I went into the final exam, I felt real good, you know. But he didn't ask anything about the characters. He didn't ask anything about the situations. He didn't ask anything like that. He said, you probably didn't know it, but there was a thread, a concept running through all those essays we read this year. I want you to find that thread, and I want you to write about it, and I want you to defend it with pieces from those things you read. Unbelievable. I hadn't paid any attention. I had no idea. And I tried my very best. I really did. I spent so much time thinking, and I'm watching everybody's writing away, you know, and I'm going, I just sat there pretty much paralyzed. And I failed the exam. I failed the final. So, you know, I went back to the teacher and I said, you know, I did real well, up until that time, you know. And, you know, I'm hoping you won't give me a bad grade. And he said, I gave you an F. And he said, and I said, yeah, but I did all this other good work and everything. And he said, well, you know, that we have rules here in college. And I said, well, yeah. And he said, well, one of those rules is this. The lowest grade you can give somebody is an F. Just following the rules. I'm kidding. He gave me a D, you know. But it's an interesting point, I think, because I had never, ever thought. And there was an essay that I myself wrote upon that I remember to this day because of that class, you know. And it was by H.L. Mencken, and he said this, you can't teach a student to write because you can't teach a student to think. They have to learn that on their own. You can't teach someone to think. That was my problem. I didn't know how to think. And so anyway, I actually went to high school the next semester. I dropped out of college and I went to night school and I took some classes and I studied so hard, and I would read each paragraph, I'd write it down in my own words, and I'd learn how I did. I practiced all that semester until I could read a book and I could tell you what the author's intent was. I could tell you not only that, but what he said. And then after that, it was like A's and B's straight through school. And I solved that by really working hard on the trial. Anyway, I was so upset that I had failed that test. I bet you anything, I worked harder in that high school than anybody has ever worked in high school, you know. You know, but here's the reason. I couldn't let this ever happen again. I couldn't do it. My career and my entire future rested on getting through college. I had to do it. And my turnaround made the difference. I strove to understand the inherent theme of everything that I read, every book that I read. What was the author's real intent? What was he saying? Even sometimes behind the scenes, he might be saying one thing, but he wants you to get this underlying message that's there. And finally, I did fine. I learned my lesson to pay attention and work hard. I passed my classes, I graduated, I was accepted in my field, and I had a fairly successful career. But I tell this story today because I believe most people in the Church of God do not think of themselves as going to school. We don't think about it that way. And we don't think, as the earlier speaker mentioned, that, you know, there's a judgment coming. You know, there's a final exam that's going to come, and there's a judgment, and everything we do is going to be counted. So my point is, right now we're closing in on the edge end of the age, and what are we doing? Are we being educated? Are we learning to be more like Christ? So here we are in 1 Peter 4 and verse 7. But the end of all things is at hand. You therefore be sober and watch unto prayer. Pay attention to what's going on. See it. Keep your eyes open and be thinking all the time, where's this leading and how do I navigate through it all? So we're at the end of all things. You and I are watching the active disintegration of America. If we watch the news every day, we're living in what the Bible calls the last days. And like the final exams would strike fear in us as students when we went to college, you know, what we see going on in the world should strike a certain amount of fear in our hearts. And it should, I think, push us or inspire us or motivate us to work harder at our goal. But the opposite is happening in many cases. So anyway, we are in school. We're being taught. And you know, you may not have thought of it before, but the tests and the trials that come along, they're no different than the teacher would give us pop quizzes. Give you a pop quiz here and a pop quiz here, so you know how you're doing. Are you learning? Are you getting the message? Are you going in the right direction? He would give you quizzes from time to time before the final exam came. And so our trials, that's what they are. They're just little quizzes along the way, and we should learn from each one of them. How did I do in this one? How did I do in that one? You know, did I get angry? Did I think it was unfair? Was I mad at people? Did I dislike some other people? You understand? Think. That's what we need to do, is think about things. So anyway, eventually we're going to be taking our final exam, and we're in training for that now, and God's church is being graded. So, in verse 17 of the same chapter, it says this: "For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if it first begin with us, what shall the end of them that obey not the gospel of God?" And what's going to happen to the people in the end who have been called to the church of God? And what's going to happen to them if they don't obey the gospel, if they don't follow it? Let's go to Matthew 24. God's testing us right now, and we're being graded as we go along. And it's vital that we understand this. You know, what kind of grade do you think God would give you? You know, what kind of grade do you think you deserve right now? You know, he's not going to halt this process right in the middle of it. And he didn't give us how much time it would be until it was finished. And he's going to surprise everybody in the church. He's going to take action in church affairs. Very strong and powerful action. That is, he's going to save some who qualify. He's going to save them from the horrifying, terrifying tribulation that is coming on this earth. And it's going to be worse than any of the tsunamis we've seen, any of the typhoons we've seen, any of the hurricanes we've seen, any of those things, with the looting and the people, police afraid to shoot looters. It's going to get worse than any of that that we have seen so far. And so at that time, if people miss out, they're going to really wish. You understand, there's a time, isn't there? Like, I really wish I would have studied harder. I wish I would have had some concept of what the teacher really wanted and in my schooling. But, you know, I was able to get through it, and I'm very thankful for that. But I wasn't paying attention. I just took each essay on its own and just tried to get through the class. Matthew 24 and verse 38. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. It's just everybody is going to be caught off guard. Nobody's going to know the day. It's going to shock everybody. It's going to surprise them. You know, people in God's church, you know, they may know prophecy real well. They may know, you know, the commandments. They may know the Bible in the order that it was originally written. They may know a lot of stuff, but they're not going to know when this is going to happen. It's going to get them caught off guard when it does. Everyone's going to be surprised. He's going to come, intervene in mankind's affairs, intervene in church affairs. He's going to take the people who were faithful, who got it. He's going to take those people someplace and protect them, and he's going to nourish them personally. And it would sure be nice to be able to be one of them, I would say. And so, he says this in 39 and 40. He says, then two shall be in the field, one's taken, and the other's left. And two women shall be grinding at the mill, one's taken, and one's left. So he warns us ahead of time that he's going to come, and he's going to surprise us. He warns us about all of that. And he says, watch therefore, for you know not what hour the Lord does come. And for years, the Church of God was saying, watch world news, watch world news. Well, we can see world news without doing a lot of watching. Things are really getting crazy. And in our world, things are happening, and there are natural disasters on an unprecedented level that are happening all the time and surprising us, you know. But my point is, he's warning us ahead of time. And the term watch doesn't mean to watch world events. It means to watch ourselves, to stay alert, to stay focused, and to not let down, and to stay sharp and vigilant. So Christ gives a parable in verse 42. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known what the watch the thief would have come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. So who's the good man of the house? He's the guy over the house, over God's house. He's talking to the ministry here. At the end, the ministry is going to let down. And what do you think the brethren are going to do with that? Think they're going to be better? Better and better and better and better? Or are they going to let down? Therefore, be also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes. Who then is that wise and faithful servant whom his Lord has made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing. Boy, that's such an important statement. It really is. He's warning people. He's saying, blessed is that servant. When he comes, he finds so doing. So what does that mean, so doing? We need to understand it, I think. So 44, truly I say unto you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, and he shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looks not for him, in an hour that he's not aware, and he's going to cut him asunder and appoint him a portion with the hypocrites. And there's going to be weeping. Well, I've wept at some pretty terrible things that have happened in my life. And I think it's going to be, it's not going to be a shocking thing that grown men are going to just cry and tears are going to stream down their face and gnashing of teeth. They're going to be so upset about it. Revelation 18. This is, I say, an issue of enormous importance to every single one of us in the Church of God. Revelation 18. I'm talking about God's servants here who are ruling his house. They'll be blessed at Christ's intervention if they are found so doing. On the other hand, there's another group who say Christ is delaying his coming, and they're fighting with each other, and they're calling other people names, and they're putting others down, and they eat and drink with the drunken, you know. Now, this could mean that they're eating too much and that they're drinking too much. I'll admit that. He could, you know, we certainly see people doing that, you know. I mean, most ministers aren't skinny, you know, and I'm certainly not, you know. But look, it says they're going to be like the drunken of this world. And this world is drunk on what? Scotch? They're drunk on the wine of the whore's fornication is what it is. So 18 verse 2. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great has fallen and become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And I just wish you could put that together with the reading today. You know, we respect the rich, you know, but look at where they're getting rich by being a part of a system that puts down the poor, that puts down other people. You know, people today, the poor people in America are not better off than they were before. They are worse off, and they're being sucked up into a vortex of spending more and more money. And Obamacare, if you'll forgive me, it's just another tax. It's just another tax. And I heard another voice from heaven say, come out of her, my people, and don't be partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plagues. And so you can see that, you know, things are coming to a head, and these things are big. They're not small events. These are going to be the most important, the greatest, and the most powerful, and the events that are going to have more effect on us and other people in the world than probably anything else. Isaiah 28, if you will. Over to Isaiah 28, where it kind of foreshadows this, because this beast and this system, we have a book coming out that will show this, has been going on from early on. Isaiah 28. The entire world has been caught up in one way in her heresy. And people in the past, even God's people, have eaten and drunk of this horrifying concoction. So Isaiah 28 and verse 7 and 8. They also, he says, have erred through wine and through strong drink and are out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through strong drink. They're swallowed up of wine, and they're out of the way through strong drink. They err in vision, and they stumble in judgment. For all the tables, just look at the wording here, it's just horrible. For all the tables are full of vomit and filthiness, so that there's no place clean. Can you imagine some of the meetings that go on and what is being said? The approaches that they are going to take are going to be often driven by what? Finances, not preaching the gospel. Finances are going to play a major role in the decisions that they make and the things that they are talking about. And I don't think personally we have gone this far yet, but what I do say is I see us moving in that direction, and Christ is warning us because he knows this is the direction it's going to go in. And so I ask you, just take a moment and look around at the Church of God, the various churches of God. Give some thought to all of them, you know. They are being influenced by false religions in many different ways, and at least if not in doctrine, although some of their doctrines have changed enough that they're starting to look more like the other religions. Many are meeting in their in churches that are Protestant or Catholic, and many of them are using the form or of government that they have. Many are using the kind of process that they use to get their message across because they think the people like it better, and so they're appealing to the people instead of God. Isaiah continues in chapter 29 and in verse 9, and he says this: stay yourselves and wonder, cry out and cry. They're drunken. Cry out. They're drunken, but not with wine. They stagger, but not with strong drink. For the Lord has poured upon you the spirit of deep sleep and has closed your eyes, and the prophets and your rulers and seers has he covered. And I'm telling you, we got an email recently of a man saying, we're the furthest person away from Mr. Armstrong. And I wrote him back and I said, look, he taught us to keep the Ten Commandments, and the church is forgetting them. They're forgetting the fourth commandment. You know? I mean, how? You can't see it? You can't look at the commandments and say this is wrong? Well, their eyes are covered because of the values and the standards they're starting to adopt from the world. And pleasure means more to them than does the commandment of God. And the vision is all become unto you as the words of a book that is sealed, which men deliver to one that's learned, saying, read this, I pray thee. And he says, I can't, it's sealed. Then it's delivered to him that's learned, saying, read this and praise. And he says, well, I can't because I'm not learned. Wherefore, the Lord says, for as much as this people draw near me with their mouth and with their lips they honor me. And that happens every single Sabbath, doesn't it? We praise him in every congregation around the world. We praise God with our lips. But they have removed their heart from me, and their fear towards me is taught by the precept of men. And so they're letting men judge how successful they are or not, you know. And I remember when the breakup of the Worldwide Church of God happened, the churches that came out didn't want to offend anybody. And I remember one large one, and I went to one of their prophecy seminars, and I went to see how they were doing. But we went through a very unique period, and I remember the questions would come to the ministers, and the ministers will say, well, we really don't know that. And they were proud that they didn't know. It seems intellectually superior to them that they didn't know the answers to these questions. And I'm sitting there in the audience, and I'm going, we used to know this. We always knew this. Everybody taught this. What happened? How did we forget? How did we forget? Well, I think our eyes got sleepy, and I think that we just closed them, and I think it became important to appease people and to let them make their own decisions on this. Do you understand where this would come from a human perspective? You understand you're leading the group, but, you know, should we keep the fourth commandment and not do business, or should we keep the fourth commandment and not do business? Well, they're not going to make an official statement. They're going to say, let you know, you do what you want to do, and it's on your head. Don't you see what they're doing? It's on your head. What they're so, it's so stupid. Sorry to use such wording, but you understand, of course it's on the head of the person that's the teacher, far worse than the person that they're teaching. You know, don't they realize how dangerous this is to themselves and to the brethren? You know, can you do business on the Sabbath or not? You know, Seventh-day Church of God? No. Seventh-day Adventists? No, they would never even dream of it. The Church of God in the 60s? Worldwide Church of God? Never dream of it. They wouldn't dream of it. We fell into this no different than Israel, who was given the truth of God and over time ended up worshiping Baal. And we're following a similar track, and this is just one step. I don't mean to just harp on this one doctrine. There's lots of other ones that are coming and have already come, that people are letting little things slip by, and it's okay, and they're comfortable. They're with their family. They're with their friends. Everything's fine. And we can't put anyone before God. We simply can't. We might as well slit our throat. It's death. That's what's going to happen if we don't do the right thing. So I'm asking you, am I making myself clear about the direction that the church overall is heading in and what we're doing? You know, they can't make an enforceable opinion anymore based on the Bible. We don't really know. Well, of course you know, if you really think about it, you know. If I would have really thought about it when we started that class in school, I wouldn't have had a problem. If I would have known who he was going to ask at the end, I'd be ready, you know. But I wasn't thinking about it. So I got it, you know. We've got to be thinking about it as we move towards the final exams. You know, an old acquaintance called me, and he was being bullied by the ministry in a certain church in another state. And since we were friends, he asked me to look into it. And I was a regional pastor at the time, I think. And anyway, so I did. And I made over 50 calls, and I wrote up 16 pages where everything against this fellow was wrong. Obviously wrong. And I gave it to the man who was over the ministry. All ministers in the whole group. It's a large group at the time. And I asked him to read it, and he read it. And I said, would you stay in this church under these circumstances? And he said, no way. No, never. I wouldn't even dream of it. And I said, why don't you fly out there and fix this? Why don't you give him at least a conference call, you know, where all three of you can talk? Why don't you do that? And he said, Art, I have to go with a local man. I have to. The churches today have to go with the local man because why? The local man, if he gets angry or doesn't like it, he will just take the whole church off to himself and he'll take all the tithes. But you understand what's motivating this? Again, it's finances. Finances are motivating the decisions that the church makes instead of Christ motivating the decisions the church makes. So that's happening there, where people are big and important. What's happening here, where we're just ordinary brethren? I'm saying you got to think it through. Stay on the same path. Don't let down. Keep it going. Keep pushing yourself to do the right thing. Keep repenting of what mistakes we make. And remember that every night we go to bed, it's a type of death, and that person we were yesterday is dead, and we start a new day, and every day is just simply practice in preparation for the final exams that are coming. So anyway, you know, I mean, you couldn't understand. We're talking about these are the biggest and brightest guys that are saying things like this openly, and I'm going, wow, how come they can't see it? You know, so I say the Church of God as a whole has, you know, sometimes become a social group, which Mr. Armstrong used to warn us about becoming, just a social group to meet on the Sabbath and just talk with one another and have some food and a little entertainment from a sermon, you know. Where is the zeal for preaching the gospel? Where is the excitement for what is going to come? And actually having a part in it, that is a turn on. But how did it get turned off? I don't get it. It's still there. It's still, in fact, I think has more meaning. And now there isn't anybody that can't say it's closer than it used to be. What in the world has happened? You know, finance is more important than religion. You know, and it's affected all of us. It has. You know, but the church as a whole has lost a lot of its zeal, and they mock Mr. Armstrong, saying he was always in the gun lap, you know. Well, now it's time to get in the gun lap, and everybody's going, oh, well, he was always, you know, he always was pushing the envelope, you know. But there's coming a time, and I'm saying it's right now, it's right around the corner, and so we ought to give it some thought and put this into context, what we're experiencing. because it is the central theme of everything that happens to us every day. Judgment is on the church now, and the finals are coming. You know, what are we going to do in the next few years? What are we going to do? It may make all the difference in the world to us. What we do in the next few years. Where are we headed? What's our direction? Is it take it easier or work harder? What is it, you know? We can keep going to church, we can keep tithing, we can keep the holy days, but that isn't going to ensure us of one single thing because it's just the basics. That's what everybody does that's in the church. To be in the church, you do this. But in our personal lives is the issue that God is going to be making the judgment on if we are in the church, you know. So are we going to be found so doing? What does that so doing mean? It means living the way of God, the way He lives, thinking like He thinks and striving to make the kinds of decisions and judgments that He would make faced with the same alternatives that we find ourselves faced with each single day. And I'm saying everyone should be working towards getting an A, you know, get an A on this test, you know. You know, many people think they know, but like me, when the final test comes, they're going to find out I don't know. Tears, gnashing of teeth, upsetness and anger, like, I mean, missing out on the richest, most wonderful blessing. Those people that go to a place of safety aren't just saving their skin. That's a special place for a special people, for special future training. These are the guys that graduate from college to go get the master's and doctorate, if you will, spiritually. They are the ones that are going to be trained even more, like the apostles were, because there were, remember James, Peter, James, and John were called pillars? What are the Philadelphians called? Pillars. And what made them pillars? They were taught personally by Christ. And so something big is coming, and an opportunity of more than a lifetime is coming, and we can't just let it slide by like day to day, every day. We've got to be working every day, preparing every day for it, you know. So the point is, you know, people think that if they're in the right church, they've got it made. People think, and I remember one deacon came up to me once and he said, well, we tithe, you know, that means a lot to God, you know. And I'm going, we think you're going to buy your way into the kingdom. That's so Catholic, you know. You know, it is so off the wall, you know. Okay, you tithe, so does that make up for all the other stuff you don't do? And in his mind, it did. It did. Or he was hoping it would. But I'm telling you right now, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's just a basic requirement to be a part of the group we're in here, you know. And so it's not that's going to be we're going to be judged on. We're going to be judged on the way we treat others. We're going to be judged on how we keep that royal law of love that David was talking about. That is a whole... I was talking to him the other day, and he really made something clear that I didn't see. It was one law. And that's why if you break any part of it, you've broken it. And I didn't see that before. And I'm impressed with that. I mean, that helps me understand why it's so important not to mess up on a day and break, because you're breaking the whole law, because it's a single entity called love. It's God's way of life. And so I think that that's an important piece of understanding. I think it's going to help me. But what is happening is a lot of people in the church are not so doing. So I want to ask people to think for a moment about, are the people grinding in the fields? You know, are they all in the right church? People in the beds on different sides of the planet? You know, are they in the same church? Does that matter? You know, are they in the midst of writing a tithe check when they're taken to safety? You know, no. They've become a holy people. They've put God's way first, no matter what happens to them, no matter what the costs are. And they've been doing the right thing. They are so doing. This phrase has only one real meaning. It doesn't mean following the crowd, because those people that follow the crowd ultimately will get lost. We can't follow the crowd. And everybody has inside them a human nature that wants to fit in. We want to fit in. We want to be like the other people around us. We want to talk like them. So I've found people in the church that would cuss sometimes when they saw me outside of the church, because they're just in their uniform, and when they were in uniform working, they did that. And then when they were at church, they had their tie on and they looked nice and they looked the part. And we can't divide our lives like that. I know we all want to be accepted. I know we want to fit in. I know that's important to us. But I'm saying what we've missed the point. Who's important here? Our Creator is important. And we want to fit in with Him. We want to fit in with His people that are the ones that are being faithful. We want to fit in with those people. And we want to be worthy for what is coming. Ephesians 4. It's what we're going to be graded on. Verse 1. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you're called. And so he's a prisoner. He's in prison, you know. He's not complaining, you know, he's saying, he's writing to the brethren, keep up the good work. With lowliness and meekness of law, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love. Boy, and striving, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. In other words, you know, people in the church I've seen don't like other people. One person, I watched him as he said, you I like, you I hate. You can't hate someone in the Church of God. They make mistakes, and we make mistakes. You know, whose mistakes are worse? From God's point of view, we're all, you know, light years away from where he's at. You know, I remember somebody talking to us about it in terms of, okay, let's all swim to Hawaii. You know, okay, well, one guy's got, you know, he's out 5 miles, one guy's out 10, one guy's 20 miles, one guy's 50 miles. It's 2,000 miles to Hawaii, you know. You know? Nobody's going to make it, you know. Anyway, the reason to do this is there is one body and one spirit, even as you're called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. So he's talking about us having these traits of faithfulness, of unity, of love towards one another under all circumstances. And this is just our duty to do. You know, we resolve our problems in love, not in hate, and not in ever hurting somebody. And there is a reason we can do that. And the reason is explained here, because there's one Lord. There's one faith. Anything else is outside the faith. It's outside of it. You want to be in it or outside of it? Only one faith and only one baptism. Only one Father, and he's above all. Really? Oh, no, you decide. You decide if you're going to keep it or not. You understand? He's above us. He's the boss, in other words. We live the way he says, not the way we want, not the way we feel. We live the way he says. We are his servants. And so the Father is to be in everything that we do, every decision and everything that we want to do. He should be guiding our thoughts and guiding our actions as well. This does not mean that he wants us all to be a set of yellow pencils, all marching along in sync. Every one of us has a different personality. Every one of us has different talents. Every one of us has different faults. Every one of us is unique, just like a snowflake. There isn't anybody that's like anybody else. Nobody is the same. We're all different and all have different talents. And that's an amazing thing that he even thought of a way to do that. You know, it just amazes me. But we're infinitely different, really, and the closer you look. And so he doesn't expect yellow pencils. He just gives us a basic, simple law of two commands, that is to love God the first four, and to love your fellow man, the last six. It's so easy and so simple to do, you know. And verse 7, but every one of us is given, to every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of Christ. And so this grace comes through God's Spirit, and he gives his Spirit to those who obey him. And so the more we obey him, the more we're going to feel this grace. And I want to remind you of Strong's definition of what grace is. The world's definition, and even the Church of God's definition, has been it's undeserved pardon. That's what they say. So you all have undeserved pardon. You get it? You're just free now. That's not what grace means at all. Graciousness as gratifying, a manner or act, abstract or concrete, literal, figurative, or spiritual. Now listen carefully. Especially the divine influence upon the heart and its reflection in the life. Do you understand what grace is? Grace is God's Spirit motivating you to live right, to make the right decisions. That's what grace is, and it's been given to every one of us. And these things should have a motivating effect on us. They should be helping us and guiding us as we live our lives. And it should be making a difference in the way we treat others. And I think it was well put earlier that that doesn't just mean others in the church, that other people outside in the world are potential children of God and should be treated with respect as such. So anyway, Ephesians 4, or verse 8, wherefore he said, when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts to men. And so we were captive to this world's way and to the bondage of trying to fit in and be one of the crowd and all of that. We were a part of that, and we were doing wrong things and things that would get us into deeper trouble, sometimes even with the law. And so he's taken that captivity, and he's taken it captive and given us the freedom and then given us gifts of his Holy Spirit to motivate us to live right. Now that he ascended, what is it? But that he has also descended first to the lower parts of the earth. That's right. He was put into the earth for 3 days and three nights after being beaten to shredded to pieces practically. And he did that for us. And so anyway, he created offices in the church, of which I am a part, and I wish I were better. I apologize in advance. But he gave some apostles and some prophets, some evangelists and some pastors and some teachers. And what's the point? Why did he create these offices in the church? For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. Why? Until we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man or woman under the measure and the stature of the fullness of Christ. Do you understand? That's the end game. That each day we're to work at being more and more like him and making decisions like him and living like him, you know. We're to edify the body of Christ until we come to the unity of the faith, until we're all on the same page. You know, the people that make it into the kingdom of God, even those that come out of the second resurrection, that make it, he's got to get us all on the same page. We have to all believe and live by the same rules. How do you live forever? Well, look at how our world's living. War, fighting, stealing, corruption. Who wants to live like this? We have to live the way he wants to live. It's the only way we could ever live forever. You know, think about it. So we all have different personalities, different gifts, different backgrounds, and we are to become united, at least in his body. In verse 16, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted, that which every joint supplies, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, making increase of the body under the edifying of itself in love. And so we are to be edifying one another, and each one of us has a part. You know, we sometimes just bring food, sometimes we bring our ideas or thoughts, and sometimes we bring work that we do for the church. And all of us, even those who are just praying. And I remember a minister telling me once about a woman who was very, very sick, and she was at home all the time and couldn't attend church, and she just used to lament, to the minister, I wish I could attend, I wish I could attend. And he said, you know, pray for the brethren, pray for those that are sick and stuff. And so he didn't hear from her for a month or so, and he went calling on her, and he found her in bed where she was with her Bible propped up on herself. And she died reading the Bible and praying for the brethren. And that is magnificent. That really is magnificent. So, judgment is going to come, and it's going to come sooner than we think. And there won't be time to change. But I'm reminding us now, because there's still time enough for us to make these changes in our lives. And we're no different than a bunch of kids in school. Have you ever been in a classroom where the teacher was called to go see the principal? And what happens? Sometimes the kids just sit there and quietly read their books, and other times spitballs are going everywhere and tests are being knocked over. I mean, you understand? Well, where do we fit in this game? You understand what I'm saying? It's the shepherd is smitten and the sheep are scattered. That's where we are. We have no apostle over us. What are we going to do when the teacher is called to the principal's office? What are we going to do without an apostle? We've been taught, haven't we? We really do know, don't we? The only thing left is to do what we know, to be found so doing. Anyway, let's go to 2 Timothy, 2 Timothy 3. Now even an hour is seeming like a long time to me. 2 Timothy 3, this is our test, and we're being tested in what is possibly going to be the worst time, at least in our generation. You know, we have advanced in technology in every way. You can just push a button and do evil today. Anyway, my point is the test will get harder as things go along. It's going to be very difficult. Here is our age. This know also, in the last days perilous times shall come. Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, and unholy. You can't tell me it's not. I just turn on the news and you can read every one of these things. People loving themselves, covetous, they're all after money. And have you ever seen how they boast? It's just amazing, you know. I mean, watch, they boast in football or basketball, and they say, I can take this guy down, you know, and he's nothing, and I can do it. I'm going, it's ugly. It's just really ugly. So disobedient to parents is happening everywhere, as I watch some kid tell his parents, and I'm not 18 yet, and I can do whatever I want. You touch me, I'll call the police. Church of God. Family in the Church of God. That's what I heard. Without natural affection anymore. Truce breakers. They'll break a deal anytime they can if it's to their advantage. False accusers, incontinent, fierce despisers of those that are good. And that's what they're going to end up despising us. There's no question we're going to stick out as this world that we live in grows worse and worse and worse. And it's pulling on us every day of our lives. And like I said, there is this human desire to want to fit in. And what are we doing? Are we moving in that direction? Are we kind of trying to placate them and at the same time live God's way? Where are we? Are we just set on God's way no matter what? Like the apostles were, like the prophets of old, where they were set on God's way no matter if the king was against them, no matter if all the people in the whole city were against them. They didn't care. They were set on doing God's way. And so I'm reminding us, never give up. Never stop. Never, ever, ever give up trying to do the right thing. You don't have to fit in. There was a young police officer. he was, well, it was in the academy, and he was taking his final exam for the force. He wanted it more than anything else. But he was given a test, a final problem that he had to solve. And it went like this. You're on patrol when an explosion occurs in a gas main. You find that a large hole has been blown right in the footpath where people are going to walk. There's an overturned van next nearby. Inside the van, there's a strong smell of alcohol, and both occupants, the man and the woman, are injured. And you recognize the woman in the van is the wife of the chief of police. At present, he's away on business. Some hanky-panky's going on there. And so a passing motorist stops to offer some assistance, and you realize he's wanted for armed robbery. You realize this. Suddenly, a man runs out of a nearby house, and he's shouting, you know, that explosion. My wife is pregnant. She's about ready to give a baby. The explosion hastened the delivery, and she's giving the baby right now. I need help. Help me, you know. And so the man is crying for help. And then another man was blown into an adjacent canal, and he was screaming, help me, I can't swim, you know. And then the test said, describe the actions you would take. And the man thought for a moment, and he picked up his pen, and he wrote, I would take off my uniform and mingle with the crowd. Do you understand what I'm getting at? That's what the church is doing. They're doing it. They're starting it. It's moving in that direction. It's complex and it's difficult and it's getting harder. And so we'll just take off our uniform and mingle with the crowd a little bit. We'll kind of look like they do, you know. Don't do this. Don't do this. I hope you get my point today. We live in just what is a chaotic world, really. We're seeing things on television going, how could they possibly make these decisions and do these things, you know. It's natural. It's just natural. You're not different than anybody else. You have a sense of need to fit in and be a part of other people and be accepted by them. I'm saying don't give in to that pull on you. You and I are in a school in which we are learning. We're taking training lessons, training to be a soldier for Christ. We are going to stand out in a crowd. We have to stand out in a crowd, and we have to be known as being different. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult, probably more difficult than we ever expected that it was going to be. But I say this, without question, it is more than worth it, what lies on the other side. So let's keep growing in Christ. Let's not let anything stop us.